Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
The buzzer went off, but the conversation never stops. This is Overtime with Jake Volnick. We are Sports Radio 92.3 The Fan.
Happy Friday, Cleveland. We are just a couple of days away. Browns, Jets getting us underway back into the season following the bye week. We have, really, what more can you expect? Paul DePodesta leaving, going away. We got first time watching Tommy Rees. Cavs in action tonight, and we got a loaded day, a loaded weekend, all to get you ready for it. Jake Volnick with the guys here from 7 to 11 on Overtime. We have Jax Gregory running the board as well. You heard him on the 2020s doing work behind the glass. James Bridges with us tonight as well. The news was odd. I just wasn't really expecting anything to come down, and it sounds like the Browns were a little bit more prepared based on Nathan Zagura speaking earlier today with the morning show, said that everybody in the building was kind of expecting a move like this and that DePodesta was going to go and probably go back to baseball at this point. But from the outside perspective, it was a little surprised. I guess not surprised by people's response to it, but just kind of sitting back and being like, I just don't know that it really does anything. Am I happy about Paul DePodesta being gone? Sure. Why not? I sat here. It's not like we've had any great success because Paul DePodesta was here. I also don't look around and be like, oh, well, Paul was the main reason on why this thing wasn't succeeding. Him walking away, not being fired, but walking away and going to baseball genuinely makes this football team any better. Because this is the thing, when you get rid of, let's say you fire Andrew Berry, right? And you walk away and you go, okay, I have to hire a new GM. That is a position that every football team has. They have to have it. And typically it makes a giant difference in a way that a team might operate. One GM to another is going to evaluate talent differently. They're going to bring in different players. They're going to operate free agency differently, trades, everything. It genuinely changes the way the entire organization runs if you switch your GM, or it can. Not saying that it will, but it could. Paul DePodesta was the chief strategy officer. Go look around at how many chief strategy officers exist in the NFL. Not every single team has somebody listed under that position. Not everybody has somebody technically gone above and valued higher than the general manager. Yes, Paul DePodesta had a say in what was happening on the football field. The players that were here, especially a lot of the moves, I don't doubt for a second that Paul had it, but we also look around, it's like nobody really knew what Paul's role was. I'm sure the people in the building, God, I hope the people in the building had any idea what he was actually responsible for. But in terms of the fan, you never knew. We knew that he was supposed to be involved in football decisions, but we don't know to what degree he was involved in football decisions. I see a lot of people trying to go conspiracy theory on this of whether or not this is A, essentially Paul being forced out of the Browns, B, a move that gets Andrew Berry pushed higher in the organization rather than fired. Or we're just looking at a guy who started in baseball, had success in baseball, moved to football and was not ultimately successful and decided, you know what? Why don't I go back to where it worked? I just don't find that to be an unbelievable thing. Is that he just walked back to baseball because baseball is where it happened. That's where he got his start. That's where he found success. And yes, I'm going to walk back in, by the way, to an organization where it's going to look like I have a chance to make major impact. I don't know how much more you can do with the Browns right now that anybody walks away and goes, thank God we have Paul DePodesta, where the Rockies are, no pun intended, sitting at rock bottom right now, any improvement, you know, Paul's going to get credited with a portion of that. As long as they trend upward, Paul's going to be viewed in a positive light. Where in Cleveland, I can't tell you the last nice thing that I heard about Paul DePodesta, really, other than online of people running to his defense. And there's a very loud minority that are doing that right now, which is also odd to me. But, like, it just doesn't do much for me. And I think you could look around and Paul DePodesta basically started here and it was 1-31, and he, you know, basically came along during the 0-16, 1-15 back-to-back seasons. It's like, okay, well, you can make an argument, you know, Paul helped get this thing off the ground, because while it was at its very worst, he also made great decisions of drafting guys like Myles Garrett, of, and I know obviously they move on from him, but you draft a guy like Baker Mayfield, who certainly helped get your organization started in the right direction. I also just look around, and it's like, okay, well, if I'm going to just run the defense of Paul DePodesta on that, I could also just look at it and go, well, the Browns are so god-awful horrendous that they did end up with back-to-back number one overall picks. And Myles Garrett was a no-brainer. And Baker, you could argue, was just the wrong pick flat out. Like, you could have just went and got Josh Allen. So it still wouldn't be a great evaluation of talent. But this is the other thing. Is we sit here and it's like, oh, well, Paul didn't do a great job. Landry didn't do a great job. Okay, well, which one are you blaming for it? Right? Like, it can be a combination. They talk about collaborative efforts. I also just think, if we're going to sit here and blame one when it makes sense for us and when it fits the agenda, and blame the other one when it makes sense to us and fits the agenda, I would like to know what Paul's actual role was. Like, if somebody would like to describe that to me within the organization, it would be much appreciated, because all I get is a bunch of, like, business jargon every single time that it gets popped up. Like, oh, he was responsible for communication and applying strategies and financial advisement about the salary cap. And it's like, okay, but I also know that what he did in baseball was not just managing the salary cap. And I also would highly doubt he was brought here just to be like, hey, can you finagle the finances? No, you're probably brought here to evaluate players as well. Again, partially what you did in baseball. So that's the confusing part for me. It's like, I don't know how much of a say that Paul DePodesta actually had. But it's not like we have to sit around and act like it was the worst job on the planet. And it's also not like we sit around and act like he did some amazing job. It was overall a disappointment. You would have liked to see him have a bigger impact. And if you're happy that he's gone, okay. Like, this should not be a move that I think elates Cleveland Browns fans, other than the fact of it's one guy who's a part of the Deshaun Watson trade, who I'm sure was a sizable part of the Deshaun Watson trade, and the decision to actually do it is now gone. But there's still no responsibility held for the Cleveland Browns. They still didn't make this type of move. You still look around, it's like, okay, well, if I don't know how much of an impact he actually had, I can't say for sure if he actually had that much responsibility in it, or if it was more Barry, or if it was, you know, I doubt it was largely Kevin, but I'm sure Kevin had his hand in the pot. You're still not fixing anything. You're not getting better by just having a guy leave the building. The Browns are going to still operate in a very similar way as long as Barry and Stefanski are still here, as long as Jimmy Haslam's the owner. Nothing really changed by Paul being gone, other than the fact of, I think you look at it, and Paul was kind of a punching bag in a lot of ways. Like, everybody looked around. The amount of people that were mad at Paul DePodesta on a regular basis, basically because you didn't know what he did. Like, that's also kind of baffling to me. And it's not like I'm telling you have to be happy with him, but nobody knows what he actually did. And we walk around and act like he was the guy in charge of making every single decision. And it bothered us that he, you know, basically operated part of the team from San Diego. Not saying these are positive things for him, not saying these are good things, but again, without knowing what his actual job is, it feels like he's kind of a punching bag. It's like, well, you brought him in to make the team better and the team didn't get better. Therefore, I can criticize him. Therefore, he's not doing his job. Again, partially true, but you just don't know where to stake the blame. You don't know where to push anything to actually get the results that you want. You don't know what this actually does for the Browns. I just imagine it's not that much. But Aditi Kinkabwala, CBS Sports, on earlier today with Afternoon Drive, and talked about DePodesta's exit, and people wanting to spin this into a conspiracy that it's not.
Time for a new challenge, right? It's been, what, nine and a half years that he's been with the Browns, and there hasn't yet been that moment of great success. So I'm sure that those are his roots, and that's exciting, and therefore off he goes. And clearly the Browns are saying that he helped create some foundational things that are helpful, and they can build off of that. This is the time to get a baseball job. That's the hiring cycle. So why would you sit here and say, okay, I'll wait till the end of the football season. Baseball jobs will be filled by then. So I don't see a conspiracy theory in that.
Again, like, the conspiracy theory makes no sense. It's like, you can be happy that he walked away. Again, we can sit here and do all of this. The only thing that this does for me is that by title, your chief strategy officer would technically be higher than your general manager, right? Like, that's the way business works, okay? That title holds more weight than the GM does. The only thing that did while Paul and Andrew Berry were both working were muddled the blame. I don't know how much to attach to either person. I feel like most of it went to Andrew Berry when we talked about the individual moves that were made. When we talk about draft picks, everybody attaches that to Andrew Berry's name. And then again, when it was like, I'm also just mad about the Browns, I'll just throw the, you know, gut punch to Paul DePodesta while we're at it. This is the one thing. It clears up now that if Andrew Berry's going to stay here, and Andrew Berry is going to stay in the position of general manager, then I can look at things and I can say, okay, when things go wrong, if you make bad draft picks, if you make a bad free agency signing or make a bad trade, I know exactly who I'm pointing the finger at. I have no questions, no doubts about whose hand is in the pot. It's now you. Like, all of it falls to Andrew Berry. There is nobody else to look around and point blame to. There is nobody else to attach anything else to other than Barry being the guy who has to accept everything that comes down from this point on. And I told you guys before, I don't expect Andrew Berry to be gone after this year. You have every reason if you wanted to fire him. Don't feel like Jimmy Haslam and the Browns are going to decide to do that. So unless Andrew's actually walking away, and the conversation that was there and thrown out there today on whether or not Andrew Berry could be getting a basically promotion out of this, I think it'd be a really dumb decision, because then we're just talking about putting Andrew in a higher position and having multiple people to blame once again. But let it fall to one person. Put more responsibility on Andrew Berry's plate. If you think he's smart, if you think he's a good GM, should be able to handle the duties of a GM. The same way that those duties are handled across the NFL. You can put some of the other stuff into, you know, other people's plates. When it comes to personnel, when it comes to drafting, it should fall on the shoulders of one guy. Everybody's going to have their hand. But when I look at a bad draft class, I should be able to hands down, no doubt, look at one person and say, at the end of the day, you submitted the card. You made the selection. And I have no doubt that you signed off on the pick. It was your guy. It was your evaluation. And you thought he made the team better. The only positive that I really see out of this. You get that, and you get, well, at least the guy who's messing it up isn't here anymore. Again, you can smile, you can cheer. I just don't see how this makes the Browns a better football team moving forward. I don't see how this makes things all that much different, other than the fan perspective of knowing where to point the blame, knowing where to push things. 216-474-0092. Are you happy with Paul DePodesta being out of the Browns organization? Plenty of good stuff coming up for you. We're going to talk about DePodesta versus Berry, how you actually differentiate the two. The Station Buzz coming your way here at 740. Lance Reisland, Cleveland.com, joins us like he does every single Friday. He's coming up at 8 o'clock. We have Dan Leberfeld of Jets Confidential Magazine joining us at 9. He joined us during the offseason talking about the draft when we're doing draft daily. He's going to talk to us again about this game coming up here. Change Your Mind moved up to 8:40 today. Get a Grip moved back to 10. That's also, we can talk about the Cavs when they wrap up in Washington when they're said and done in the 9 o'clock hour. And of course, Heroes and Villains to wrap up the show. But right now, 216-474-0092. Are you happy with Paul DePodesta being gone out of the Browns organization? I honestly, if you have a shrug, your
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Shoulder answer or a yes. Don't know that I really disagree with you. You can also get to me on X, by the way. Volnick Jake, V-U-L-I-N-E-C, Jake. We get to our social media reactions powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. We get to all this on Paul and Andrew Berry. More coming up here in 5 minutes on Overtime with Jake Volnick. With you guys here until 11 on The Fan.
He's going back to his first love, obviously, baseball, and got an opportunity to talk with him. Very happy for him on that. I think that, you know, Paul DePodesta is a guy who is somewhat misunderstood in terms of what it was that he did for the Cleveland Browns. And I think, you know, when you got to know him, an incredibly intelligent guy, streamlined a lot of processes for the Cleveland Browns, and certainly wish him well. You know, obviously you hope that over the 10 years that he was here, the Browns would have a little bit more success than they did. You know, you got the one playoff win, two playoff appearances, but I really enjoyed getting to know him. I thought he was always very candid whenever I got a chance to talk with him. Like I said, highly intelligent guy, very thoughtful guy, and I enjoyed getting to know him and wish him certainly all the best with the Colorado Rockies.
Nathan Zagura of the Browns Radio Network on earlier today with Ken and Anthony talking about Paul DePodesta, the role he played here. And so I were asking you, 216-474-0092, are you happy with Paul DePodesta being gone? I thought Nathan's comments were really interesting because Nathan mentions, like, I just think he was somebody here who was misunderstood. My problem is, I don't know how I can misunderstand you if you never give me the opportunity to understand you. He talks about him being cordial. The problem with Paul DePodesta, I think, with a lot of Browns fans, is the idea that I never got to see Paul talk, right? He never stepped in front of a podium. He never addressed the actual fan base or the media. I never really got an explanation on what he does. So it's just a guy who you're telling me has a massive impact on the team, but then deciding to not tell me what that impact actually holds. Right? Like, what is it that he's legitimately responsible for? So I know whether or not I can sit here and be upset that he's gone, or whether or not that I can say good riddance because everything you did was a complete and utter failure in the 9 years that you were here. That's where a lot of my problem lies. That's where I just don't understand. Like, I would have loved to have those things, but it felt like Paul living in San Diego pretty much just hid in the dark the entire time, and we never got anything. We didn't get an explanation from anybody on what he did. That's where I look around and I go, okay, at least I have clarity. At least I look around and I can see what people are responsible for now, other than just saying, was the chief strategy officer and then tossing a bunch of, you know, business jargon into what his actual job title is. No, tell me what he's responsible for. I can look at a GM and go, he drafts my players, he makes trades, he signs free agents, and is in some part responsible for the salary cap. Okay. I can point to clear things that he does that impact my football team. When you tell me, I mean, when I read what Paul DePodesta did or somebody tries to explain it, it's like I'm reading a resume where you're just going out there and trying to throw anything you can at the wall to make it sound like your job was more important than it actually was. Again, 216-474-0092. Are you happy that Paul DePodesta is gone? Let's go out to the phones. And Dave is in Cleveland. What's going on, Dave?
Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say I am extremely upset he's gone because he's a quitter. He did what I do. He didn't quit until he found another job. Like he couldn't even wait until his contract was up. I don't know where he was in it. Couldn't wait till the end of the season. I mean, he pretty much just gave up. He quit, right?
I mean, in a lot of ways, Dave, like, and I see where you're going with it, and I appreciate the call. I don't necessarily know that it was a quit. Like, we listened to the clip from Aditi last segment. And it's like, this is the hiring cycle for baseball. Like, if you're going to get a baseball job, you do it now. Now, I also understand the frustration and being upset with the fact that you're coming off of a bye right now. You're halfway through the football season and you decided to leave. Like, yeah, I agree. I would like somebody to finish out their job, finish out their contract. But I also understand the other side of it. Like, if you're going to take a job in baseball, you take a job in baseball in November and you take it in December. You don't wait until January or February. Those jobs get filled because we're talking about getting ready for spring training and making sure that everybody's in a position, knows their role and doing their job. Like, all of those get filled. So, yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, I get it. But I don't know. Like, I don't necessarily see it as quitting as much as, like, just trying to move on. in trying to go back to what you wanted to do. But also not going to tell you if you think that he quit on the team that you're ultimately wrong either, because he did walk away. Let's go back out to the phones. Carl is in Canton. What's going on, Carl?
Hey, yeah, I've got some thoughts on this. If we recall, when DePodesta, who's a friend of Jimmy Haslam's, Sashi was also brought on board. Of course, Sashi's long gone.
Right.
Sashi was the brainchild as far as a lot of what, you know, as far as the Browns, as far as that goes, before he left. DePodesta is a talent scout. That's the reason he's not in Cleveland. He's somewhere else. He is an athletic talent scout, not necessarily a football mind. I don't know that. But Haslam's not a football mind either. But I think the impact of DePodesta leaving this year, it's done. The trade deadline's done. There's nothing he can do. The team is what it is. I don't believe that DePodesta made a parallel move. I believe he bettered himself.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, Carl, and I appreciate the call as always, I think like that's also the main thing here. Is like I think you make a really good point in the fact that if you're talking about DePodesta quitting, like, what's Andrew Berry's job for the rest of the year, right? Other than, okay, it's now definitely time to lock in, start scouting college players, figuring out what you're going to do with contracts and things along that lines. But it's all, like, back work. It's all a behind-the-scenes type of work. There's nothing up in front that Andrew Berry, like, if he wanted to step to the podium today and have a conversation, it's like the only thing you're going to talk about is the things that happened in the past or things that are coming up months and months into the future, all the way into the offseason, into April for the draft. So I guess it's a fair retort of basically sitting here and saying he didn't quit. I also think, yeah, if we're talking about the job, like, I kind of laid that out. Your work with the Browns, I mean, you were pretty much already set in stone after 9 years the way that the fans thought about you. There was not a ton of positive that came away from this. There's not a feeling that a ton of people really thought that there was going to be a turnaround for Paul DePodesta where they could walk around and say he's doing a great job. And when you go to the Rockies, you have the flip. Like, if that team turns around, I'm sure there will be a credit to Paul DePodesta, especially knowing what he did with the A's years and years ago. Like, there will be that same type of feeling that he did make an impact there. It will put you in a better light to then continue your career, continue to get paid, continue to get jobs. You're only bettering yourself. You're only getting into a better position. So I am really not bothered by him walking away, among the other things. But I guess right now with trying to place blame on Paul and trying to place blame on Andrew Berry, it feels like the things that we assess with them are very similar. Like, the way that we evaluated both of their jobs were in a lot of the same aspects. It was talent evaluation. It was the players that were brought into the team. It was making trades. And again, a lot of it goes back to how good were the players you were bringing in and how great were the players that you decided to move off of when they left. But I look at them as basically being criticized and praised, very little praise, but a lot of criticism for the exact same things. And it does make me question, when we talk about football moves, whether or not Andrew Berry really did have full football power. Like, did he have full decision-making under his belt? Did he have that ability awarded to him and not just overshadowed by Paul? And your job basically being a really nice title without a ton of the work attached to it. And I wonder how much of that goes the other way, too. And it was just a big title for Paul. And you mentioned he's a friend of Jimmy Haslam. Carl just mentioned it on the phone. It is. How much of that is just you basically getting to sit around and hold the title in an organization for maybe less work that you do? Again, it goes back to what I was talking about, where it looks like things are muddled up. But this does not help with how to feel about Andrew Berry. Again, I told you, I think that he's going to be here next year. I don't think they're going to move on from Andrew Berry. I think he got a better chance that they would move on from Kevin. And I don't even know if that's really going to happen. I think it's a struggle to hold your job when you give up play calling in 2 years. That's just me. But, like, Andrew, I feel like his job's really not going anywhere. As much as fans might love it, I don't. But it doesn't help me with how I'm supposed to assess Berry in the last 6 years that he's had with the organization and saying you've been a colossal failure without knowing how much power he actually held. And, again, you stay away from a chief strategy officer. You eliminate that from your entire organization at this point. If you decide to keep it that way, it changes everything. It changes everything that you have put into it and everything that we have to extract out of trying to actually assess what's going on with this team. I'm sorry, and maybe it's just a complex for me to be able to point my finger and know who to blame when something's going wrong, but I do like to have that ability. I do like to, you know, have clarity that if something's going right or something's going wrong, I know who to give credit to and I know who to blame. And I think for a lot of fans, like, that should be an important aspect of this. It doesn't always have to be perfect. I'm not saying it's going to be clear as day all the time, and especially with the Browns, it feels like it may never be clear as day. That was evident by Jimmy Haslam taking basically all of the blame for Deshaun Watson. Like, I do like the idea that now, if even if, you know, Jimmy has his hand in the pot, which everybody will tell you right now that he doesn't, so that's what I have to go work off of. But everything that happens, I know I can blame Barry in that aspect. And everything that happens on the field, I feel like, okay, I look at the talent around you, and based on that, I can blame Kevin Stefanski. You just have clear areas to point. But again, the bottom line here is that, you know, somebody involved in the Deshaun trade, somebody that involved this team going from a team that made the playoffs twice and had won a playoff game, in just basically all out, somebody involved in this team's failure is away from the organization. In a lot of ways, again, it's not the Browns holding somebody responsible, but it's the closest thing we've gotten. He might have walked away, but at least somebody who is responsible for it is no longer on the organization. I don't really think people would care if Kevin Stefanski decided to up and quit or he was fired. I don't know that it makes a difference for people. And I don't know that it should. Like, yeah, would it be nice to know that somebody's holding someone accountable? Sure. But either way, if you feel like you have a problem with Stefanski or you feel like you have a problem with Barry, the minute that they're gone, then you would feel better about it. It's that pound of flesh that people constantly talk about that fans are looking for. It doesn't matter how they're gone. Fans just care that they're gone. And that is by far the most important thing. But at the end of the day, if I'm trying to figure out between Andrew Barry and Paul DePodesta, like, and I'm trying to assess where blame goes, I don't really just don't know that it matters. Like, again, I told you, I like to be able to have someone that I can point the blame to. But ultimately, they want to talk about this is a collaborative process. And they talk about Paul as a thought partner. Okay, well, that means Andrew Barry's thoughts were still heard. It means Kevin Stefanski's thoughts, Jimmy Haslam's thoughts, Paul's thoughts, all heard and all played an impact. So, like, I can still look here and, like, I don't know how much blame to assess to Andrew Barry, but I know there's still blame to attach to him. I know that he's not free of anything. And when things have gone right, like this draft class, I know that sitting in the war room was not Paul DePodesta submitting the draft card saying, we're going to take this guy. Barry still gets credited with Quinshon Judkins, with Carson Schlesinger, Fannin, anybody else, Mason Graham in this draft class. You still get all the credit and all the blame for guys like Dylan Gabriel so far. So it just, again, like, it's why it attaches back to when I look at it and I say, am I happy about this move? I really don't have a feeling. Like, I just am kind of indifferent about it. It doesn't really matter what Paul was doing or now that he's gone, because we were blaming Barry anyway. We're holding Barry accountable for this as a fan base, no matter what was happening with Paul DePodesta. We're holding Kevin accountable for what's happening on the field, no matter what happened with Paul. So it's like, I don't really don't care what the difference between Paul's job and Andrew's job was. I'm still going to operate the way I know how to operate, which is looking at the GM and saying that you hold blame for part of this and that you're not free of everything. I just know now that I can look at Barry a little bit closer, but I think that everybody that jumps to this and looks at it as a giant win, it's like, what actually changes about the Browns today? What actually changes about, I guess, technically yesterday into today? But what is different today than it was at the start of the week? The Browns haven't gotten any better. The Browns haven't gotten any worse. They're the exact same team that was still out there. They're going to operate the exact same way. I think whether Paul is here or Paul is not here, the operations of this team really do not change. If you want to make change, fire a head coach. Fire a GM. Do something genuinely impactful. Right now, we're looking at the exact same Browns regime and the exact same Browns process that has been going on for the last 6+ years. Paul DePodesta being here or not being here hasn't changed a single thing. Behind the scenes, sure, but in terms of the way this team's actually going to go about drafting players, running their offense, running their defense, and whether or not they're going to put wins and losses up on the board was not dramatically impacted at the end of this week. Whether or not they beat the Jets on Sunday does not matter whether or not Paul DePodesta is employed by the organization. The work he did is done. The team's still left right where they are. Like, congratulations. And nothing's changing with Paul gone. 216-474-0092. Is there a way that you feel like we can differentiate Andrew Berry versus Paul DePodesta, and the most pressing things from our station's guests today, coming up with the Station Buzz in 5 minutes on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan. Coming up here in about 18 minutes, we're going to get to Lance Risen, Cleveland.com, going to be joining us on The Fan Hotline. We're going to talk to Lance about everything Browns related following the play calling change. We're going to talk about quarterbacks. We're going to preview Browns Jets all coming up here at 8 o'clock. But right now, let's get to the most pressing thing said by our station's guest.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Yesterday, let's do it with the Station Buzz. All right, let's kick things off. Nathan Zagura, Browns Radio Network. You heard from him earlier on Paul DePodesta, but he was on with Ken Antley this morning, also talking about trying to get Jerry Jeudy the ball a little bit earlier in the game.
He's not even catching half of his targets. That's unheard of. His yards per target is the lowest of his career. It's basically half of what it had been for his entirety of his career, where he has not had great quarterback play. So it's what I think it's a couple of things. I think, number one, defenses are playing us in a manner in which they are not afraid of a lot that we do offensively. And if there is anybody getting any extra attention, obviously it's Quinshon Judkins, and then it's Jerry Jeudy. I also think that for whatever reason, you know, there have been so many games this year where the ball hasn't gone his way in the first quarter or even in the first half. And that, to me, you know, you got to find a way to get your best players in a rhythm. And so I think it's really important. One of the things the Browns have to do over the second half is get Jerry Jeudy going. They've got to make a concerted effort to get him the ball early. And I know it's doable.
Yeah, so this is something that needs to change with Tommy Rees, just basically out there. And we're going to ask Lance about it again coming up here at 8 o'clock about Jerry Jeudy trying to get involved. But, like, I don't know how you don't get the guy the ball. Like, I don't care what the defense is game plan. I don't care if they're stacking eight in the box. I don't care if they have two guys attached to Jerry Jeudy for the entirety of the game. I don't care if that's every defense that plays you's game plan. There are things you do to get your player involved. There are things you do to get the best playmaker you have on offense, at least at wide receiver, the ball at any given moment. Like, I don't care. Throw him a screen. Do an end around to him. Let him get the ball into his hands. Let him feel involved in the offense. Like, listen, I can't sit here and say that Jerry Jeudy dropping the ball left and right is anybody's fault but his own. And certainly it isn't. But you think, you get the guy some targets early, you show him a little bit of volume, not only are you just going to be more productive on the plays that do actually come his way, just because it's him getting the ball and not, I don't know, Jamari Thrash or Isaiah Bond, but you're also probably going to have a more invested wide receiver as the game goes on. You're just going to be looking at a guy who is more involved, who is ready to play. And hopefully, you know, Dylan throws the ball to him a couple of times. Maybe Jerry does something, and there's a little bit of trust built there. Targeted him twice in the first half, or twice for the entire game last week. Not going to get it done. Like, you have to have Jerry involved in this. He needs to be a focal point in this offense, and especially in the passing game. There's no excuse for it. Get your tight ends involved. Get Jerry Jeudy involved. I'm sorry, I really don't care what Cedric Tillman gets for a stat line production. I don't care. Isaiah Bond's going to probably be out this week. I don't care what he gets in his stat production and Jamari Thrash and everybody else. But in the passing game, it should be your two tight ends. It should be Jerry Jeudy on this team. Find a way to get them the ball. That should be one of, if not the main goal for Tommy Rees this week. Get the playmakers the ball. And after that, let them take care of work and we'll figure things out from there. Aditi Kinkelball of CBS Sports on today with Nick and Jonathan on Afternoon Drive. And with the play calling change of Tommy Rees, is expecting some change.
You know what? I'm actually really interested to see. I don't know. I genuinely, having not had the conversations yet, I don't want to speculate, but I think that there will be some differences. You're not going to see a wholesale difference on offense, obviously. You can't do that midstream like this, and you can't do that with a rookie quarterback. But obviously, this is a move being made because there's an expectation that it's not going to be more of the same.
So this is a part where I struggle. It's like I sit here and I try to find something that actually gives me any belief that the offense looks any different with Tommy Rees than it does with Kevin Stefanski. It's not like Stefanski's goal as a play caller is like, you know what, we're just going to run the ball up the middle and we're just only going to have Dylan target guys who are 3 yards down the field. Devin might not be in his right mind right now, but he's not completely out of his mind either. Like, he's still a good offensive coach at the very base of things. So it's like, I know you're not actively sabotaging the team. I know you're not doing things that you don't think are going to work and are just going to hold you back from having explosive plays. Is there a little bit that in trying to protect the football, trying to make sure your defense is a good position every time that they have the ball? Yeah, I think Kevin plays conservatively. I don't know that that changes with Tommy Rees. Again, still your offensive coordinator. He still has an input on the offense that was built and how it's run. Like, he's still chiming in, I'm sure, to Kevin throughout games and definitely throughout the week in practice about what this team needs to do and how to properly operate. I just don't see right now, going to Tommy Rees, what's going to change, unless you just decide, okay, well, you know what, let's just scrap most of what Kevin's done. I'm going to tell Dylan to just sling the thing wherever he sees fit. Go target guys downfield. If you throw a pick, that's okay. And by the way, we're just going to design plays that are getting the ball into our players' hands. Like, there is no other option. It's a screen pass. You're throwing it to Jerry Jeudy. You don't have another route. Like, everybody else is going to be actively blocking on this play. You better get the ball to Jerry. You better get it on time and on target. It's the only way that I see things really playing any sort of difference under Tommy Rees. And even then, I like Jerry Jeudy. He's not Jamar Chase. Like, he's not, I mean, Devon Achane. Let's throw that one out there, okay? He's not one of the guys that you just get the ball and he's an elite playmaker. He's good. Wide receiver two type. I still don't know how much that really helps an offense that has been, for all intents and purposes, completely anemic. Let's go to Brian Anderson, Tampa Bay Rays color analyst as well, former Cleveland Indians pitcher, on today with Baskin and Phelps, but talking about the Browns and the way defenses feel about playing this team.
It's abysmal watching that offense. I do like watching the young running backs when they touch the football because they can make some special things happen. But when you've got an offense that cannot stretch the field at all. They cannot stretch the field. How easy is that for a defensive coordinator? He can almost play his normal defense as if it was a goal line defense.
Yeah, and obviously, like, Brian's not breaking any news here. We've watched this team go every single Sunday. Like, this is part of the problem. Is like, I don't care about the innovation in the offense when we talk about Kevin trying to run like two trick plays and then getting called out by Mike Vrabel. Okay, fine, have fun. Like, I really just don't care about it. It's the fact that, like, you have to do something to throw the ball down the field. I don't even care if it's incomplete. You have to mix in the passes. Like, right now, it just feels like Dylan doesn't even attempt to throw the ball beyond 10 yards. It allows defenses to play like that. And Brian's right. Like, nobody looks around and fears this offense in any way. I don't think that there's a single team right now that's like, all right, safeties, we got to be on alert today, okay? We got to be ready to go. Watch out for that ball coming deep. They're like, okay, somebody goes deep, we'll put them in man coverage. Doesn't really matter, because who's afraid of it, right? Is Dylan actually going to put the ball on a rope down the seam to Isaiah Bond or David Njoku? No, probably not. So you really just don't have to fear it. Right now, it's take away Quinshon Judkins, put extra, you know, attention his way, and force Dylan to make a play that basically everybody knows he's not even going to make an attempt at making. That has to change this week. You have to give defenses a reason to fear the Browns at any given moment on the offensive side of the ball. I'm not saying you got to be a great offense, because let's be real about it, you won't be this year. That's just the way they are. Like, you have to find a way to at least make teams respect you and respect that you could make an explosive play. Because right now, it's like, if it's not going to be Quinshon to break off a big run, I don't think anybody has any belief that the Browns are going to do anything of value and actually change the way that they have to play defense. Just come out there, put eight in the box, and everybody will be terrified on the offensive side of the ball that they can actually do anything. And there's going to be no answer. There's going to be no adjustment. I'd like to see that out of Tommy Rees, too. You're just seeing him put eight in the box. I don't know. Call a shot play. Again, call play action and just lob it deep. Throw it to Jerry Jeudy. Hope he goes makes a play. If it's a pick, congratulations. Thanks for the arm punt. Like, I'm just not that afraid of my quarterback throwing interceptions to the point where I can't make an explosive play. I need to see that. I'm okay with interceptions to a degree. Protect the football, sure, but not at the cost of having the offense go three and out for 60% of their drives. It's also not worth it. All right, let's keep things rolling. Connor Rogers, NBC Sports, on today with Afternoon Drive, talking about the draft and the quarterbacks he could see going in the first round next year.
I think three are really in the conversation, and I would bet a large amount of money that not all three declare. I would actually even say it's closer that two of the three don't declare. And, you know, that's Ty Simpson at Alabama, who's really played his way into this conversation this year. And I always kind of caveat this with a lot of these guys. You know, Fernando Mendoza from Indiana is the next one, and Dante Moore from Oregon is the other one, is that these guys have not played a ton of football, especially Simpson and Moore, where what we see these next couple months here in big games is really going to matter so much when you're evaluating one-year starters. For Mendoza, it's a little different because he did transfer from Cal where he played, although I still think there's questions about him as well. So I think if the draft was today and all three of those guys declared, all three would go in the first round. And there's a lot of reasons to like all three, as much as you always get a little scared off by the one-year starters, specifically in Moore and Simpson.
Yeah, I mean, this, if anything, just provides me with more fear for what's actually going to be available for the Browns in the draft. Like, yes, you have two first-round picks. That's definitely going to help you if you want to move up for a quarterback. But at the same time, like, we're playing the Jets this week. You already have a better record than the Jets. And the Jets, I mean, if you lose this game, Lord have mercy on all of us. But, like, I just don't see how I'm looking at this and going, okay, well, there's three guys. You're telling me that not all three of them you think are actually going to come out of college, which I wouldn't disagree with. Like, I would think there's a good chance Dante Moore stays or Simpson out of Alabama. I think there's a good chance that either of them could remain in college. And so you could be talking about first-round talent at quarterback really being closer to what it was this year than what it was, you know, going back to Jane Daniels, Drake May, and Caleb Williams. Yet that is a sign for fear. It also could be a sign that if you really like Shador Sanders, and maybe if the Browns really like Shador Sanders, it might be more of a viable option to go and play him next year than you actually think. Like, I don't know how great these quarterbacks are, and if the Browns are coming away with that evaluation too, that, hey, even if Arch were to come out this year, he might not be a first-round pick. Drew Aller certainly isn't a first-round pick. Brent Nussmeier isn't looking like a first-rounder. Cade Klubnik, all those guys that we thought were going to be great, and we're going to be those highly evaluated prospects, are no longer sitting in that same tier. Yeah, there's fear whether or not the Browns can find a first-round quarterback next year, especially when you have games coming up against the Jets, the Raiders, the Titans. Three very winnable games. I don't know where five wins leaves you. All right, last one here. Our Cleveland Sports beat reporter, Daryl Ryder, on today with Ken and Anthony, as well as Afternoon Drive, but this one coming from the morning. Lima tosses him a question, and you hear Daryl's response, and what the next coach for the Cleveland Browns could look like.
Daryl, the one issue I have is that if you were to keep Andrew Berry here, I think it eliminates the chance of getting a Mike Vrabel type coach or Sean Payton. Who are those guys that would even be available to give them the reins, give them all the power?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking unproven coordinator dude again, right? Getting another Kevin Stefanski, Rob Chudzinski. I mean, because that's what the Browns have hired historically. They rarely hire a coach with previous head coaching experience. I think that if a coaching change ultimately gets made, guys, I think it's going to be another unproven coordinator dude type of guy.
So I take two things away from what Daryl had to say on this. It's one, I think a lot of people would react to this and be like, well, I don't like to hear that, because people want the proven, like the Mike Vrabels of the world. People would rather have the Pete Carrolls of the world, even though he's struggling in Vegas. But like, guys who have been there, guys who have done it and have shown that they can have success in the National Football League, I don't really think that's a reason to be scared of a new guy. I mean, Ben Johnson is having success right now in Chicago with no problem. He was an offense coordinator, never head coach type of guy. Also, the thing it tells me is that if you think Tommy Rees isn't on the table, I would say think again. Again, one of these coordinator guys who has a high standing, who is respected among the league, who clearly the Browns themselves really like. If you're going to move off of Kevin, I would imagine you'd at least give Tommy Rees a little bit of a look. All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Station Buzz. When we come on back here in 5 minutes, Lance Reisland, Cleveland.com, breaks down the play calling change and Browns and Jets coming up here on Sunday on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan.
What's the right step to take?
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.